You're listening to the Tipton Children Podcast.
So let's start with our motivation. Think of all the different life forms there are throughout the universe. Animals and insects and all sorts of other beings who we can't see with our eyes, and how many zillions of sentient beings there are who are born in those different kind of life forms, those different bodies. And that of all the realms of existence, the one that is best for learning the Dharma is rebirth in the human realm. So comparatively few beings are born as humans. And even amongst those who are, not all of them have a precious human life with the 18 conditions that make it favorable for listening, practicing Buddhist teachings. So somehow this lifetime we've stumbled upon those conditions and have a precious human life, indicating that in previous lives we created a lot of good karma, a lot of merit that is ripening in our present existence. And so we don't want to waste this opportunity by just playing around in samsara, running after all the sense pleasures and happiness of this life. So instead of just frittering our life away like that, we want to use it to transform our minds, to purify our minds, to create more virtue, enhance our minds with virtue, to listen to the teachings, planting the seeds of the realizations in our minds, and then watering those seeds by our practice. So let's have a strong motivation to do this. And while we have a strong motivation to also be patient and realize that we can't accomplish everything at once, and so to have a long-term motivation to practice in the long term, and especially to practice so that we're able to benefit all living beings. Because we have our present opportunity due to the kindness of other living beings. So we want to repay their kindness and do our spiritual practice so that we'll be more capable of repaying their kindness by showing them the path or modeling the path for them. And so to do that, we need to learn the path, we need to practice it. And so for that reason, we're here this evening to listen to the teachings. So let's make that altruistic intention our motivation for being together this evening. We've been doing the Gajuna's precious garland, one of his famous texts. It has five sections, and we're already on section five. And section 5 was talking about the bodhisattva practices. And where we left off at the end of section 4, remember, Nagarjuna was had just instructed the king on royal policy, how to practice the Dharma, and at the same time be a king. And then at the end of section 4, he said, but if you find it too difficult to govern as a king, then become a monastic and practice the Dharma as a monastic. So that was the end of chapter 4, holding us in suspense. And then at the beginning of chapter 5, Nagarjuna didn't say what the king decided, but we can guess. And he began to explain the bodhisattva practices to the king. And so the first thing he said that he has to do is to eliminate 57 faults. So some of these faults are mental afflictions. Some of them are the causes of the affliction. Some of them are bad actions. Okay, but 57 things too. How many flavors does Heinz have?
57.
57, yeah, okay. So, yeah, so just like Heinz. Okay, so we started on those 57 a few weeks ago. And I just want to review the last set we did, which was on pride, the different kinds of pride. Yes, you remember those? Okay. So the presumptive pride that is thinks that we are equal to someone who is in fact better than we are. Okay. The first one is the
pride itself, the three branches.
Yeah, is the pride.
Inferior to be inferior.
Yes. Wait. Okay. So the first one is where we think of ourselves as three branches, as inferior to the inferior. So I'm the worst one. Equal to the people we're equal with, so competing with others. And third, greater than or equal to the inferior. So, all those creeps, I'm better than them. Really nice mental state, isn't it? Yeah. And then the second type of pride was presumptive pride, where we think we're equal to somebody who's in fact better than us. The third is pride beyond pridefulness, where we think we're more excellent than the people who are superior to us. So, the number one was like the comparing, you know, related to people who are inferior, and then 2, 3, 4 are related to people who are superior to us. Okay. I'm sorry, 2 and 3 are. Then the fourth kind of pride, is the conceit of thinking I am, you know, just based on grasping ourselves as truly existent. I am, you know, that statement that we make. The fifth kind of pride is conceited pride, which makes us think we have attained spiritual attainments that in fact we haven't. So we walk around all arrogant thinking that we're somebody, and we really look like a jerk because we don't really know anything. Okay, but we do that very, you know, we love doing that one. Then the fifth kind of pride was, that was the fifth one. The sixth one was erroneous pride, where we boast about all of our wrong actions. Like there was an example that we heard a 3-minute clip of a few weeks ago, of somebody boasting about all their wrong actions. Yeah? Perfect example of it, isn't it? Yeah? And then the seventh kind of pride is the pride of inferiority, that makes us, where we feel overwhelmed and we just say, I can't cope with this, this is too much. Which we do sometimes too, don't we? Yeah, we kind of give up on ourselves and, you know, feel sorry for ourselves and just feel overwhelmed by the world, you know. And I think that's often based on, you know, some quite unrealistic expectation of ourselves, thinking that we should, you know, already be Buddhas, we should already do this, we should. Okay, so as they say, we should on ourselves. Okay, then the next verse is verse 4:13. And so here with 13, 14, and 15, we are going to be talking about the five wrong livelihoods that applies particularly to monastics and how we get our wherewithal to stay alive, food, clothing, shelter, and medicine, but they also apply to others. Okay, so verse 4:13 says, hypocrisy is to restrain the senses for the sake of acquisition and respect. Flattery is to utter primarily pleasant phrases for the sake of acquisition and respect. Okay, so when we're talking about acquisition and respect, these are two of the things that everybody's attached to, but especially the monastics, because we're cut off from having other kinds of pleasures. We want acquisition is, you know, I want stuff. And so we can't go out and work. So how am I going to get the stuff I want? I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that. So how am I going to talk people into giving it to me? Okay, so this is what's involved in wrong livelihood. And then also, so that's the acquisition one. And then wanting respect is also, it's easy for us monastics to fall into that. You know, well, I'm a monastic, so, you know, people should respect me because I've given up all these other things, so, you know, you should think that I'm wonderful and because I know the Dharma, and you should also tell other people how wonderful I am. Okay, so that's in the monastic conference, but also as lay people, don't think this doesn't apply to you. Okay, hypocrisy, we also do, you know, when you are applying for a job. You know, you pretend to be something and you aren't that thing. Yeah. So wanting acquisition, wanting respect in our job, wanting a good paycheck, whatever. So we do all sorts of things and say all sorts of things to get what we want. Okay, so verse 4:13 is about two of them, of these five wrong livelihoods, hypocrisy and flattery. So hypocrisy, he's saying, is restraining our senses, so not getting involved in looking around at so many sense objects so that we look like we're a really renounced practitioner. Okay, so we restrain our senses. We're not walking into people's house and picking up everything and, UC Davis Health Service. Where did you get that? That looks so nice. How can I have one? You know? We're pretending to be, you know, very renunciate, not paying attention to sense objects. But we're not doing this because we're really renunciant. We're doing it because we look like we are. And then other people will respect us because we are, and they will give us things. So this is like rotten motivation through and through, and really deceiving other people. Okay? And so we do it for for material things, for respect, to get people to help us. Yeah, so we put on a show that we're very realized, very renounced. Okay, then flattery, which is the, so that was the 16th of the 57. The 17th is flattery, where we say very nice things to people in the hope that they will give us offerings or respect. Okay, so this is very different from praising people with a genuine motivation to point out their good qualities. This is, you know, saying nice things because we want something out of somebody. Yeah. Now, I don't know about you, but when I go through the five wrong livelihoods, it makes me think that as a kid, I was often taught that if you want stuff, it's very impolite to ask directly. So you do one of these kinds of things. Yeah? Were you kind of taught that as a kid or modeled that as a kid? Oh, it's so, so impolite to say, give me this, or I want this. That just looks plain out greedy. Yeah. So you pretend to be very sophisticated so that people will give you something. Or you flatter them with all sorts of nice things, you know. And it works because people are like me and they're total suckers for flattery. Yeah, you flatter me, I will do anything. So many people are as foolish as I am, and we, you know, try to trick them by flattering them. Okay, then 4:14. Can you think of times in your life where you've done either of those two? Yeah. Okay, then verse 4:14. Hinting is praising others' possessions so that one might obtain them. Harassment is openly deriding others in order to acquire something from them. So again, you know, rotten motivation. Maybe we tried hypocrisy, they didn't bite that one. We tried flattery, they didn't go for that one. So now we're going to hint. So now we praise others' possessions, you know. Oh, you have such a beautiful sweater. A maroon cashmere sweater. That one's beautiful. Hint, 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 hint. Or not just praising their possessions, but praising what they have given us before. Yeah? So remember last year, you gave me this really warm winter jacket. I love that so much. I was so cozy all winter long. And then the cat peed on it. Hint, 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 I want a new one. Okay? So, those kinds of things, yeah? Either praising them for what they have or praising them for what they gave us before. Yeah. Then harassment, openly deriding them, yeah, is, it's like coercion. We put somebody in such a position that they can't say no, okay? So harassment could be, it could start out with just criticizing somebody, yeah? Telling somebody, you know, you're really stingy, you know, you have a lot of money and look at the donation you gave to us, it's pathetic. Yeah, you can do better than that. I know you have a lot of money. You know, we often say it in a much nicer way, don't we? We're not so blunt. But that's the context of it. You know, you're so stingy. Or maybe we play favorites, you know, with two different benefactors. We kind of, you know, say what so-and-so gave a donation of, $3,000, and the message is, how much are you going to give? Yeah. Or everybody else chipped in and helped, you know, kind of, yeah, you better do something. So it's, you know, it's coercion. It's putting somebody in an uncomfortable position so that they give us something or they respect us, but just to get out of that uncomfortable position. So not very kind to others. Okay. These are wonderful, rotten motivations, aren't they? Yeah? Okay, then 4:15, verse 4:15. The desire to acquire things through what has been acquired is to praise what has already been acquired. And then carping, which is not one of the five wrong livelihoods, but it's in this verse, is constantly remarking on the mistakes that others have made. Okay, so insinuation, actually I made a mistake. Insinuation is where you're praising what you've received before in the hope of getting it again. Okay, hinting was praising their possessions, hoping that they'll share them with you. Insinuation is praising what we've received before from that person or maybe from somebody else. Yeah, but insinuating that this person should give us something, okay, or should respect us. Now, often when there's various ways of describing the five wrong livelihoods. In another way that I learned, insinuation or hinting and hinting are one, which is why I got them confused. And then the extra one is giving a small gift to get a big one. Okay? Which also I saw modeled so much when I was a kid. Yeah? It's somebody's birthday, so you give them a present so you don't look like a cheapskate. But you give them something cheap in the hopes that when your birthday comes along, they'll give you something really nice. Because they'll feel obligated because you gave them something. Okay? Anybody else do this? Yeah? So, you know, you give a small present and then hoping somebody will give you a big one back in return because they feel obliged or because they feel flattered. So there's some overlap with all of these, you know. Oh, look, so-and-so, you know, gave me this pen, you know, one of the few pens that says Shravasti Abbey on it, so I must be special, and I'm going to give them a very nice donation because of that. Yeah, so some kind of rotten motivation. Okay. So those are the five wrong livelihoods. Yeah. So if those don't make you sick to your stomach, they make me sick to my stomach because they're so involved with deception. You know, with lying, with pretending to be what you're not, and really, and to me, that kind of thing is such a breach of trust. Yeah, I mean, it's just really breaching the trust that you have with other people. So we'll go on to the rest. They're not going to make us feel much better, but if we abandon them, then we will feel much better. So carping is nagging. Yeah, nagging. So you're constantly talking about others' mistakes. You're constantly telling them that their chanting is horrible and they really need to improve and they need to listen to each other and start higher and not go flat in the middle of it. And you tell them over and over and over again and they nod their head and then the chanting stays the same. So that's one example of carping or nagging. Okay. Another variety, okay, is where you put things in the kitchen or where you put the vacuum cleaner, you know. If I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times. Yeah, put the ladles here. And of course, people have short-term memory loss. And they don't. So we remind them many times. Yeah. Or, so that kind of thing, you know, pointing out people's faults, pestering them, nagging them. Okay. It could also, this is talking, you know, about nagging in terms of pointing out their faults and their errors and discussing other people's mistakes with other people. But we can also nag people for what we want. You know, like we did when we were kids. And remember when you want something, your parents, again and again and again, we nag. Yeah. And it works. Sometimes our parents just, you know, they're sick of hearing us. So they give in to us. That doesn't help us very much. Yeah. I heard a cute little story once about like a young practitioner, and it was when they were in Dharamsala doing 100,000 soak offerings to Guru Rinpoche. So you're reciting the same verse 100,000 times, making this offering. So one junior practitioner said to one of the lamas, "Why do we have to say this verse 100,000 times? We've said it once, and we've made the offering once. How come we have to do it again and again?" And the lama said, "Well, it's just like when you were a little kid and you want something. You didn't just tell your mom and dad once. You told them many times." So it's a good example. Okay, so that's carping or nagging. Yeah, we get some very strange pleasure out of, you know, talking behind people's back and nagging and putting them down repeatedly. And, you know, I mean, I even nag the kitties. Yeah. Mudita, do not bite, do not claw. Yeah. And then she bites and she claws. So I see, just like everybody else around here, she doesn't listen to me. So I nag some more. Yeah? So I nag all the kitties. Because like human beings, none of them do what I want them to do. Okay, let's go on. Oh, this one's a good one. Okay, so verse 4:16. Stupefaction. I had to look that word up. Do you know what it means? Stupefaction. It means to be oblivious or to be dazed. You're a space case. It's a polite word for being a space case.
What is a space case?
Huh?
What is a space case? You're there, your body's there, but your mind is gone.
Yeah. You're distracted. You're in la-la land. Yeah. Okay. Something's going on around you and you're going, ah. Okay, so stupefaction is the state of being overwhelmed that comes from not thinking clearly or from illness. And boredom is the attachment of the lazy when they are deprived of what they need to support themselves. So I was trying to find better words for these two, but it's very difficult, given the definitions, to find an English word that exactly suits it. Okay, so stupefaction. You're irritated, you can't think clearly, you feel overwhelmed. Yeah, and so it could come from being sick. You know, like when you have a bad cold and you can't think clearly, or you have the flu and a high fever and you can't think. Or it could come from dissatisfaction. Yeah? And I wonder if it also, you know, has an element of depression in it. What do you think? You can't think clearly and you feel overwhelmed and slightly irritable.
Sure, you're disconnected. There's a non-interest somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, you're just like, whatever. Oh, yeah, I don't care. And you're not paying attention to your surroundings at all. Yeah, lots of me-me's. Okay, then boredom is another kind of stupefaction. And it comes due to dissatisfaction and to laziness and from not having what you need. Okay, so it says it can be caused by a lazy person's attachment to his inferior possessions. So I was trying to think of an example, yeah? You're attached to your inferior possessions, but you don't also really have what you need.
Inferior possession means...
Like low quality. No, you have low quality things. Your possessions are low quality.
Why you were spaced out on that?
Yeah, this is what is a little bit difficult to understand. Yeah, so you're attached to your
easy chair, your little recliner.
Yeah.
That you've had for 30 years.
Yeah. Okay. So you're attached to your recliner that you've had 30 years. Okay. That stinks to high heaven. Yeah, because all the kitties have peed on it.
And your TV with rabbit ears.
Oh, yeah. And your TV with rabbit ears. Oh, yeah. Okay.
She's got one channel.
So yeah. You're attached to those. Okay, so you're a lazy person attached to inferior possessions. You don't really have what you need because you have that stuff, yeah, and you're dissatisfied, but you're also lazy and you're not going to do anything. So, yeah, that I could see how that would bring boredom, yeah, where boredom is just like
in a rut,
yeah, like being in a mental rut, yeah, you don't have any curiosity, you don't have any creativity, you're just flat. Yeah, yeah, that one would certainly be involved with depression. Okay. The stupefaction one, the previous one, could come from illness. So you might be like spaced out while you're sick, but then when you get better, you know, you're not as spaced out.
I think that one's more about no energy.
Yeah, maybe stupefaction is no energy, and boredom is no interest. Mm-hmm.
Constantly speak or lament about our problems, so we blast others permanently with our worries and our difficulties. We don't say them in the same way about positive things or something, you know, something that is joyful. So in Nagarjuna means he's saying that this is a lack of equanimity that depends on physical sicknesses or mental disturbances. Yeah, we don't have any control of what we say, or we don't ask ourselves how others interpret it or understand it, or if we can change something in a situation.
Yeah.
So on and so on.
Yeah. So being really oblivious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Based out, yeah. Not caring about the people around you or, yeah, what's going on. Okay, then 417, discrimination of differences is an attitude obscured by attachment, aversion, and confusion. The failure to examine one's mind is what is called inattention. Okay, so number 24. Of the 57, discrimination of differences. Yeah. So this isn't an emotion or, you know, but it's something to abandon in the sense that we're making a strong differentiation between us and them. You know, there's us And then there's those people. Yeah? But this is kind of relating to the election, isn't it? You know? Yeah? And so, you know, I don't know if you know, who considers themselves them and who considers themselves us. And okay, but a lot of discrimination between us and them, between I want and I don't want, I like and I don't like. Okay, discrimination between friend and enemy. So making lots of categories, very black and white ways of thinking, basically. Okay, and so these kind of discriminations are caused by attachment, anger, and confusion. And they also increase attachment, anger, and confusion. Yeah, because when we're attached to something, then there's the thing I'm attached to and that I want and the thing that I don't like. Okay? When I have very strong self-grasping, there's those on my side and those on the other side. Okay? So all this kind of differentiation that puts us in a very painful state of mind, actually. Yeah, when we have a lot of that, thus and them, good and bad, no shades of gray anywhere. Okay. So a lot of that would feed into having a lot of judgment. Yeah, judgment of other people. Judgment of ourselves. Okay. And then the inattention is the opposite of introspective awareness. Okay, so introspective awareness monitors our mind. It goes. It is a friend of mindfulness. Mindfulness remembers our precepts. It remembers our object of meditation. And then introspective awareness checks and sees if we're still living according to our values and our precepts, if we're still on our object of meditation or not. Okay, inattention is the opposite. Yeah, it's again, we're spaced out, but it's a slightly different kind of spaced out. It's like we're not monitoring our own mind. Okay, so in that case, we're not aware of whether our mind is in a virtuous state or a non-virtuous state. We aren't aware if it's under the influence of an affliction. Yeah, if it's not under the influence of an affliction. So again, a different kind of spaced out, but all along, but still spaced out. Okay. Then verse 4:18. Not treating spiritual mentors in the manner of the Blessed One is the loss of respect that occurs due to being lazy about concordant activities. It is agreed that this makes one a negative person. Okay, so loss of respect is when, out of laziness, we don't show respect for those who are worthy of respect. In particular, our spiritual mentors, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, our seniors, you know, depending on the culture that you come from, you know, if you're taught to respect the elders. And just general respect for people who excel in one area and another, and people who can, you know, because they're good at something, they can really help us and they can benefit us. But we don't show them any respect. So it could be out of pride, it could be out of jealousy. But, you know, yeah, we don't show respect. So this one's more a particular behavior, okay? And wait a minute, I skipped something. No, I didn't. No, that's right. Okay, so that kind of behavior is contrary to what the Buddha prescribed. In our monastic gathering last week, this topic of respect came up, And it was very interesting. Venerable Steve brought it up. And he spent the first 5 or 10 minutes of his talk apologizing for even talking about this and saying how difficult it was to talk about and how he's thinking it would be useful, but, you know, this, that, and the other thing. Yeah, did you notice that? Yeah. And so, you know, why is talking about showing respect so difficult? Yeah. So I think because we have a lot of arrogance. But he was saying that in the Vinaya, it's very, you know, it teaches you that the people who are ordained before you, you show respect to. But the people who are ordained before you do not demand respect. Yeah, he made a point of saying it nowhere says that if you're senior, you can demand respect from somebody else. And I've seen some people do that, and it's just disgraceful. Yeah, when they kind of lecture somebody about, well, I'm senior, so you should treat me like this and that. Yeah, completely disgraceful. Actually, you know, in the whole thing of respect, it's also a system of care, yeah? When you're senior, you have responsibilities towards the juniors. When you're junior, you have responsibility towards the seniors. And so when people are keeping their responsibilities, then they are showing respect to each other and they're caring for each other. So the juniors care for the seniors by helping with various tasks and cooking and cleaning and washing up and running errands and things like that. And the seniors take care of the juniors by encouraging them and teaching them and giving them advice. Yeah. This system breaks down because of people's pride, because sometimes seniors try and help juniors and tell them what to do, and the juniors get defensive and bite off the head of the seniors and say, don't tell me what to do. Yeah. Or the seniors come on really strong and heavy-handed. Yeah, so, you know, I was ordained 1 year before you, so therefore, you know, I'm superior. You know, like, what kind of hogwash is that? Okay. But, you know, the whole thing of respect is something important, you know, because humility is a quality of a good Dharma practitioner. And so to be humble, we have to show respect to others and not demand respect from others. Although you stop clawing on the carpet. And I'm superior to you, so you listen. Yeah, but like everybody else, he's not going to.
Did you say something about carping earlier?
Yes. Yes, I'm very good at carping. I freely admit it. Yeah. Okay. Then becoming a negative person, yeah, is number 27.
Yeah. So you changed the word from vile to negative?
Yes. In verse, we're on verse 26.
Verse 418.
418.
I'm sorry, 418.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
The verse is 418.
Person, yeah. Here it has negative person.
Okay.
Why? Does your translation have vile person?
Yeah. Oh. Becoming a vile person in the case of a spiritual teacher.
Yeah. Okay. So, becoming a negative person here refers to a spiritual teacher who is supposed to be teaching the Dharma, but they're not, and instead they are teaching something incorrect. Yeah, either because they don't know it well, or they don't like what the Buddha taught, or they're making up something that they think sounds really good so that more people will come to their teachings. Okay, so that's becoming a negative person, and we are instructed to avoid such people for good reason. Okay. Then, 419. Okay, now we're going to go into a whole series of ones that involve attachment, different kinds of attachment. Sometimes it's different degrees of attachment, or attachment to different kind of objects, or whatever. Okay, so it starts with 419. Longing is a lesser mental obscuration that comes from desirous attachment. Obsession comes from lusting for something. It is an extreme mental obscuration. Okay, so desirous attachment, can be great, middling, or small, and probably, in between those as well. So longing comes from the small kind of desirous attachment, and so it's when we see something we like, something that's attractive, something that would be so nice, and we long to have it, Or we see, somebody that we like and we long to be with them. Okay, so this kind of longing. And the thing that's detrimental about it is it keeps us completely tied into sense objects and tied into things of this life. And in that way, it keeps us in samsara. Okay? So there was the song about love, love makes the world go round. And from a Buddhist viewpoint, desirous attachment or craving makes the world go round, the world being cyclic existence. Okay? So, so longing for somebody, longing for something. Yeah, but this is the small kind of desirous attachment. Obsession, which is number 29. Arises from great desirous attachment, and it craves and is totally obsessed with the objects of the five senses. So it could be objects, of sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. It could be people. People are also, objects of the senses. And so all this kind of obsession keeps us, again, trapped in samsara. So it could be, some examples maybe would be somebody who thinks that they have to have a lot of money in order for to be anybody in the world. Yeah, to earn anybody's respect, they have to have a lot of money, so they just crave more and more and more money. Okay, or something where you're obsessed with a person, you're so madly flipped out about that person that you think about them morning, noon, and night, and you can't think about anything else. It's called falling in love. In common language here, it's called desirous attachment or obsession. Okay? But when your mind's totally preoccupied, okay? So keeps us quite revolving in cyclic existence. Then verse 420, avarice is a mental state of attachment brought about by being attached to one's possessions. The attachment to others' possessions is called unsuitable greed. Okay, so here are two more kinds of attachment. Avarice is when we're really attached to our stuff, I have such a wonderful thermos that I am cherishing it, and I will not give it to you, and I will not even loan it to you. Okay? So avarice is, we're so attached to our things that we can't share them with others. We can't give generously because we can't bear to part with the things that we are attached to. Okay, so avarice is attached to our possessions. Unsuitable greed is attachment to others' possessions. Okay, so we look at what other people have. We covet their possessions. We think, how can I get this? How can I talk them into giving it to me? How can I get the money to buy it? And then we just want more and better, more and better, more and better. Okay. So, you know, at one point you were satisfied with your old television with the rabbit's ears and one station, but no more. Yeah. So you want another TV, you want a color TV. And then that's no good, you want a big screen TV. And then you want cable television. And then you want computer on your TV screen also. And whatever you have, more and better, more and better. Okay, we know that one. Okay. So that was verse 420 about avarice and unsuitable greed. Okay, then verse 421. Lusting in opposition to Dharma is to approve of attachment to women who should be avoided. It says women means anybody that you're attached to, sexually attached to. Fraud is when one who does not have good qualities pretends to have good qualities. Okay, so lusting is, also another form of attachment. But here the object is a person that we're sexually or romantically attached to. Okay, and so motivated by lust, then we glorify sex. I mean, this is what our society is all about. Sex is glorified. It's the ultimate be-all, end-all. It's what makes your life worth living. It's what makes you valuable, blah, 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 blah. Okay, and so then people become very attached to sexual relationships. They praise the qualities of the people that they're attached to, so they write love songs, they write poetry. Okay, we know all about this, don't we? We've all done it, we've all sung the songs. Okay, and so through this, then people come to act in opposition to the Dharma because their object of refuge becomes another samsaric sentient being who they think is going to provide them with happiness and not the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, who are showing us the actual path to happiness. Okay, then fraud. Yeah, it's also a form of attachment. The verse says, fraud is when one who does not have good qualities pretends to have good qualities. Okay, oh, so what fraud is attached to is making a good impression on other people. Yeah, we want to impress other people, we're attached to our reputation, we want to look good, okay? Either because that makes us feel good about ourselves, or because it brings us, possessions or whatever. But, you know, desiring to make a good impression on others, we give them the impression that we have good qualities that we don't have. Okay, so it says fraud here. It's being fake. Yeah, it's being fake. It's being a phony. It's trying to be what we think other people think we should be. Okay, so we want something from those people. So we try and think of how they must want us to be. Okay, so it's a little bit crazy making, because we do what we think they think we should be. Yeah, and we present ourselves like that so that we can make a good impression on them. They will like us, they will speak well of us, we will get praise, they'll do us favors. Okay.
We also use that as like a way of, like we present ourselves in a way that we think that they want to see us as, but then when they don't react the way they think we are, then we persecute them in our own minds because they're not reacting the way
We're trying to present a certain image. They're not buying it. So we don't like them because they're not buying it.
That's what I was trying to get through, is that they're not even thinking of what you're thinking of. Like, you're projecting something and they don't even like completely blank it. It's not something they consider of you.
Yeah, because we're doing what we think they think we should be. And maybe they don't think that. Okay? And they don't want us to be that, you know? And so then maybe we blame ourselves, you know? Oh, I'm not good enough for this person. I need to, you know, do this and that and become this and that because then they'll really like me. So we tie ourselves up in knots, presenting ourselves in a certain way with the hope that they will just think that we are wonderful. Yeah, which is a setup, of course, after they think that we're wonderful, for them to think that we're creepy. Because how are we ever going to live up to that fraudulent image that we've created and made them believe? You know, there's no way to do that. Okay, so fraud's also a form of attachment. Then 22 continues with attachment. Okay. Great desire is an extreme yearning that leaves behind the good fortune of contentment. Craving approval means thinking I will be known as having good qualities, no matter what. Okay, so great desire is extreme greed. Yeah. So, you know, greed was wanting the possessions of others. Here we really want the possessions of others, especially when we go shopping. I mean, shopping centers are designed to increase greed and to increase great desire. Yeah, we're supposed to want those things. Okay, so instead of being content with what we have, you know, we want more and better. We're always looking around. What new thing can I get that other people don't yet have or that is better than what they have so that they will think well of me? Okay? So we run out to get the latest gadget. You know, I don't know how many iPhones there are, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You know, one new one comes out, we gotta get the new one because it's better. Our friends won't have it yet. We can then assess it, you know. So you get an iPhone, then you get an Android, and you compare them, and you become the world's experts on Androids and iPhones, and all your friends think that you're really very far out. Yeah, because you can have one and one or the other. Talk to yourself the whole time. Okay. Yeah. So, there's no contentment. Always looking for something. Yeah. So it could be looking for a new possession. It could be looking for a new relationship. You know, this person is wonderful, but, you know, because after you stay with them for a while, yeah, you see some faults. So, you know, let's trade them in. I want a new relationship, you know. A new one that's going to be bigger and better than the previous one. Who's not going to let me down. You know, when you start that one out, and then that one puts us back where to obsession and lusting. Yeah. And then again, that one falls. We're no longer content and we want more and better, okay? So in possessions, it could come with our job too. Yeah, no matter what job we have, we want one with a bigger title. We want one with more pay. We may like our job very much, but it doesn't, we aren't content with it. Yeah, it doesn't look good enough. We don't feel successful enough. Yeah, so we want a different job with a different title so that we look better, so that we can be fraudulent and present ourselves as, you know, on top of the world. You know, and then you get the right accoutrements, the right kind of partner. Yeah, because you, when you, you know, have fraud and you want to present yourself in the, in a certain way, according to what you want other people to think you are, then you have to drive a certain kind of car. You have to have a certain kind of partner. You have to comb your hair in a certain way and have certain kind of clothes. It's true, isn't it? Yeah. And then you, so you get all these things to help create the image of who you want to be and present yourself like that to other people in the hope that if you can convince them that you are that fantastic person, then maybe you'll believe in yourself. But of course it doesn't work. But we keep trying.
Just listening to you is tiring.
Yeah, it's exhausting. But we, what it does, you know, is we use people. Yeah? We use people, you know, so that they can make us look better. Yeah? If I have a certain kind of partner, then I will look better in other people's eyes. So it's quite interesting. You can see this in the presidential election, too. I won't talk about who. You know, but it's a very good example because we have the same thing. Yeah, we do the same thing. Okay. And then craving approval means I will be known as having good qualities, no matter what. Okay, so we may want to be known as having particular good qualities. So depending on our family, you know, if we're still in competition with our siblings, then, you know, we may want to have more of whatever it is that our parents see as making us successful. Okay, so you're still competing with your siblings. Your parents think that, you know, having a fantastic job is what makes you successful, or they think having, you know, lots of kids makes you successful, or that having few kids makes you successful. So whatever it is, you're still trying to do that. You know, because you want approval from other people. Or in our workplace, we want the people to approve of us. Yeah, so after we take 2 weeks out to go to a meditation course, when we come in the office and they say, where'd you go on vacation? We don't say to a meditation course. Yeah, because that is not high status. Yeah, we say, I went to the Caribbean, where there was a meditation course, you know. Or I went, you know, wherever we went, this beautiful far-out landscape, you know. So we put it that way to again, look better, yeah, gain other people's approval. Okay, so we project a certain reputation, a certain appearance. We create an image just seeking other people's approval. So we can do this in the Dharma too, yeah, where you get a certain kind of meditation cushion, yeah, according to, you know, the Dharma group you go to, because some Dharma groups, they all have square meditation cushions that are high, and other groups have round meditation cushions that are low, and some groups have meditation cushions with, what is it, buckwheat inside? And some meditation groups have cushions with, you know, fluff, floss, you know, or some kind of whatever it is inside, okay? So you have to get the right meditation cushion. Yeah. And then, of course, you want to have the right kind of cover for your Dharma books. So you want a very beautiful brocade Dharma book, the cover for the Dharma book, and you may even want your recitation text printed out like Tibetan texts, you know, so they're long and narrow like this, one line in Tibetan, one line in phonetics, one line in English, and then you go like this, and you feel like you're a real Tibetan yogi reading from it. And you've even memorized the Tibetan phonetics. You don't understand what they mean, but you can say them really fast. Yeah. And you get the right kind of clothes for your Dharma center, you know. And of course, you know, the big thing is the picture on your altar with you, with the teacher, autographed. Yeah. Yeah, there's the teacher and me. And he signed it, did you see?
The ultimate is having your own meditation.
Yeah. And that picture of the teacher and me was taken after I drove him around going shopping in town. He rode in my car. And I took him shopping. Oh, we had such a good time. There are so many funny stories. Okay, so using other people to create an image for ourselves. Something we want to try and be like, or present ourselves as. Okay, then 423. Oh, the craving approval is, no, you know, I'm going to have this image no matter what. So we're really biting in this, you know. We're not going to give up. Then 423, non-fortitude, means that one is unable to bear it due to harm or when one suffers. Impropriety is the failure to respect what should be done with regard to preceptors and gurus. Okay, so non-fortitude, this is the opposite of fortitude. So it's not just the lack of fortitude, it's the actual opposite. Okay, which means that you can't tolerate any criticism, you can't tolerate any pain, you can't tolerate, you know, some of the feelings that the Dharma makes arise in you when you begin to see yourself. Okay, so, you know, you can't tolerate insult, injury, you're going to become very defensive, very aggressive, really stick up for yourself, or, you know, you'll become very defensive and you'll run out of the room because you can't bear it and slam the door and go cry and feel sorry for yourself, you know. But we can't bear criticism, insult, you know, even a kind person giving us a suggestion because they care for us, we can't even bear. Okay, and we can't bear any kind of suffering at all. Yeah, we just have the sniffles a little bit, and it's like, oh, I have the sniffles. I feel really horrible. I've got to lie in bed today, and, you know, take aspirin and take this and that and the other thing because I'm gonna, you know, for sure get pneumonia. Yeah, so some little suffering. Yeah, we can't bear. We take precepts and, you know, where we can only have lunch. And at 11:30, we're like, oh God, when's lunch going to come? I can't bear this hunger anymore. Yeah. I wonder if I can eat something before it's time to eat. But then I'm breaking the precepts, but there must be some way to get around it. Okay, so becoming, getting upset when criticized, becoming very anxious when some small thing happens to us. And then impropriety is not acting in the correct manner. So specifically how a student is to react, to engage with their preceptor or their teacher. Okay, and so it's also failing to show respect or to do what is proper in relationship to our parents. So it's kind of like that other one we had before. Where was that? Loss of respect, number 26. Yeah, was when we don't show respect for those who are worthy of respect. Okay, so this one is similar. Yeah, that one it specifies in particular showing respect. This one is having respect. Okay. Actually, if we're just showing respect but we don't have respect, that's not very good. And if we have respect but we don't show it, that's also not so good. Okay. So cultivating respect for people worthy of respect is something that we have to do. Other people can't tell us that we should respect them or respect somebody else. But rather, we need to see the advantages of feeling respect and showing respect and then cultivate that within ourselves. Okay, so we did a lot today, didn't we? Okay. We started with stupefaction. And we got all the way 15 through 16 to impropriety. Okay, so we kind of whizzed along this evening. Questions, comments? Yeah?
In those 4 to 17, the discrimination of differences?
Yeah.
That's kind of the opposite of equanimity, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to feed into. Well, you know, with equanimity, you can see differences, but you're not hung up about the differences. In this one, yeah, you see the differences and you're really hung up about them. Yeah. I want this, I don't want that. There's my side, there's the other side. Okay? So equanimity, you know, doesn't mean that we wash over all differences. We may see that we're all similar in wanting happiness and not suffering, but we also recognize that different things make different people happy, and people suffer from different things, too.
This is reacting to differences,
right? Yeah, yeah, really reacting to it.
Mm-hmm. So having respect for somebody versus showing respect, that just doesn't apply just to those who are in a position that we should respect, should apply to everybody.
Yeah.
Like, you see someone on the street and you don't think, oh, that person, they're less than me, because you respect them for being like a fellow human being and
right.
having done the good karma to be in that.
Right.
No matter what their lifestyle or their inability to see the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, so developing respect for all living beings is important. And here, the one of impropriety is among all living beings, there's people who are especially kind to us, like our parents, like our spiritual mentors. Those people who are especially kind to us, we should especially respect, yeah, because of how we're benefiting from their presence in our lives.
So would that be generating more respect or reflecting on their qualities which deserve respect more so than you would others?
Yeah, you would increase the respect or generate it by reflecting on their qualities. Yeah. And reflecting on the role that they play in your life and how you've benefited. And then, you know, it could apply to other teachers too. People we look at who are good examples for us, who inspire us, you know, to respect them. Because when you think about it, if we're so arrogant that we can't show respect to others, how are we going to develop ourselves? How are we going to gain any new qualities? We're so puffed up. Okay. Or sometimes we respect others, but we don't want to show it because it's embarrassing or something like that. Yeah. Again, that's not so good.
Well, I think that carping and nagging is actually done with an afflicted mind. And so, going back to the comment about the chanting, I don't think that's what's going on there. We may hear it as carping and nagging, but the motivation is to help us, you know, improve.
Oh, so somebody's projecting a good motivation on me. That's nice.
But isn't that, carping, just the sound of it.
Yeah.
Carping
is...
It's a rotten motivation.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, carping and nagging is with a rotten motivation.
And then as teenagers, we accused our parents of that.
Yes.
But they were actually trying to help us. They had to repeat it. So then we called it nagging.
Yes. Yeah, they were actually trying to help us. Maybe once in a while they nagged.
Well,
but they were in general trying to help us.
Yeah.
And maybe once in a while we nagged them. Maybe a lot we nagged them. Yeah. So with carping, there's not a very good motivation. We're wanting something. Yeah?
I thought of a good example of fraud.
Okay.
So I have a relative and at the beginning of her marriage, she would wake up before her husband and put on makeup, do her hair, and go back to bed before he woke up. Yeah, I eventually realized.
Wow. Yeah, I wonder why. Okay, yes, I'll repeat this so in case people didn't hear it. So he had a cousin who got married, and she would wake up before her husband and put on makeup and then go back to bed. Yeah. So that she looked gorgeous upon waking. Yeah. And he would be fooled to think she always looked like that. That also says something about him, you know? Not just about her, but about him and what he's expecting.
Heavy sleeper.
The hair dryer's going.
Any other comments, questions? Okay, then we'll dedicate.
May the spiritual teachers who lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it, have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. Grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Lhasa's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Idam Rura Namandala Kamniryatayami.
Due to the this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born at no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful Tenzin Gyatso Chenrezi, may you stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially at Shravasti Abbey in the west floor.